Hello and welcome to The Wrap, WRAL's politics podcast. I am state government reporter Will Doran, and here with me today is nobody. Loyal listeners will know that sometimes my colleagues Laura Leslie or Brian Murphy co-host the show, and they are both out on assignment doing important political work today. So I am hosting solo. We've had a really busy week. I will go through it all. We'll try to wrap this up pretty quickly. But let's start, of course, with the big news. The Prime Minister of Japan in Raleigh, Greensboro and Raleigh, Fumio Kishida, came here after a state dinner at the White House with President Biden. He's meeting with Governor Roy Cooper, and they talked about economic development. Governor Cooper has pushed hard for years on bringing in jobs from Japan. And this actually started under former Governor Pat McCrory. He had pushed for a Toyota auto plant when he was governor, and then Cooper came in before that deal sort of finished. The plant ended up going to Alabama. It had looked like a failure for the state at the time, but it planted a seed with some Toyota executives that, hey, North Carolina seems like a pretty good place to do business. They ended up putting a massive, massive electric vehicle battery plant here. It's going to open in 2025, employ 5,000 plus people. So the Prime Minister was touring that plant. He was touring a Honda facility in Greensboro that makes jets. And they also announced that a Japanese biotech company, Fujifilm, is expanding its operations in Holly Springs. It's already got a plant there, makes vaccines and does some other cell culture science work. It is adding $1 billion to that plant and is going to, in investments, and is going to create about 680 jobs in exchange for some taxpayer-funded incentives from the state and from Wake County and Holly Springs officials as well. So it's been just kind of a whirlwind visit with them. WRL has covered the heck out of this visit. If you would like to go see video of that or read more of our in-depth reporting on these economic development efforts and just kind of the cultural exchange in general, that's all on our website. I definitely suggest it's been truly a team effort. I've participated a little bit in some of those stories, but there's been maybe a dozen or more people who have been working on those. So definitely go check that out. We're going to talk about a lot on this podcast. Other than that, we have some budget updates that we got from House Speaker Tim Moore this week. There was a White House cabinet official in Fayetteville. Why was he there? We had a couple congressmen in Ukraine. The Supreme Court was very busy this week with oral arguments. But that's a lot of policy. First, let's get into some politics. 2024 is upon us. The general elections are heating up. But before we get to the general elections, we have a runoff voting has started in the runoff elections here for some of the Republican primaries where nobody got above 30% of the vote and they needed to have a second primary to determine the winner. We're going to have primaries for the Republican Party in the lieutenant governor's race, in the auditor's race, and in the 13th district for Congress, which is here in the Triangle. It covers parts of Wake County, all of Johnson County, and then a lot of the counties sort of on the periphery of the Triangle. And probably whoever wins this primary is going to be representing the area in Washington. There is a Democratic candidate in the race, but this is a very heavily Republican district. Runoff is between Kelly Daughtry and Brad Knott, and earlier this week, former President Donald Trump endorsed Brad Knott. So that obviously does not guarantee that he will win the race, but that is certainly a coveted endorsement in Republican Party politics. I should note that Daughtry has been picking up some endorsements of her own as well, and of course Trump isn't the only person to endorse Knott, so both of them have some allies, some surrogates who are really pushing. On paper, the two candidates look pretty similar. They are both Triangle area attorneys from wealthy, well-connected, politically connected families, but they have some different visions of how the state should go. My colleague Andy Spey has been writing a lot about that race, that runoff, and he's got some more reporting coming out on that. I definitely suggest people watch for that over the weekend, the 13th District, Kelly Daughtry, Brad Knott runoff. At the state level, looking ahead to politics, we know that immigration is going to be a huge issue in the elections for governor, for president, for Congress, and the state legislature is going to move ahead with an immigration bill forcing sheriffs to work with ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Now, if this sounds familiar, it's because the legislature has been talking about this for years. Governor Roy Cooper vetoed this same idea several years ago At the time, there were enough Democrats in the legislature to uphold that veto, so it did not become law. Now, Democrats have lost the ability to block vetoes. Republicans have a veto-proof supermajority. And the bill passed one chamber in the legislature last year, but it never moved. And why, you ask? Well, it's so that it can get brought back up in 2024, an election year. Talk about immigration, a key issue. All of our polling, all of everyone's polling shows that immigration is a key issue on the top of mind for voters, and not just Republican voters, Democrats and independent voters as well, although it's particularly on the mind of Republican voters. And then we also saw, speaking of the governor's race, Josh Stein, the attorney general, had a press conference announcing that he has, or his office has resolved the backlog of rape kits in North Carolina, untested sexual assault evidence that had really plagued the state for a long time. I mean, these were, you know, pieces of evidence from years and years past that were just sitting untested. No one had bothered looking into them, looking at this DNA evidence. And as they've slowly been tested, it's led to arrests from assaults in the 80s, in the 90s. And, you know, the victims have had to wait for years for justice, but it finally has come as they've worked on this backlog. And that was, as people may recall, actually a key issue in Stein's 2020 reelection efforts when he was running for reelection as attorney general. Jim O'Neill, the Republican who's running against him, who's now in the lieutenant governor runoff that I spoke about earlier, he had slammed Stein over that rape kit backlog. Stein had hit back, suggesting that, you know, maybe O'Neill was part of the problem himself. That actually led to criminal charges being not filed, but considered by a grand jury against Stein and some top campaign aides. He sued, saying that was a First Amendment violation. You can't charge someone with a crime for stating a political opinion. And he won. The federal courts here struck that law down as unconstitutional. So he won that case in court previously, but now he has also resolved that kind of political liability heading into the governor's race. So that is probably good news for the Stein campaign. Let's take a quick break right here, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of those policy issues that I mentioned earlier with cabinet official in Fayetteville, budget, all sorts of really fascinating things. Stick around. And we're back with the wrap. Thank you for listening. Like I said, it has been a very busy week in North Carolina politics, and we heard from House Speaker Tim Moore on Wednesday. He met with some reporters at the state legislature. The legislature isn't quite back yet for the short session. That starts on April 24th, but they've been kind of doing these monthly check-ins, and we had one of those. And he spoke about some of the big priorities that they're going to have for tweaking the budget. You know, people who've been following politics know that these short sessions and the even-numbered years, the main goal of those is to really just update the budget. And if you can get some other things done, like, say, passing this ICE immigration bill, great. But the main goal is working with the budget. And Speaker Moore noted a couple of pretty big chunks that the legislature is going to need to figure out how to deal with. They are $400 million short on Medicaid, he told us, and $300 million short for the Opportunity Scholarships Program, the private school vouchers. So $700 million if they want to fully fund those shortfalls. It's a lot of money. They're also going to have to deal with, do we want to give additional raises to teachers and state employees? Do we want to do something to supplement some funding for childcare program now that some federal COVID-era funding for childcare is leaving? That's an issue that's actually pretty important to the business community because, you know, if people are unable to get childcare, they're going to have to quit their jobs. And so businesses want there to be plenty of options, plenty of affordable options for childcare so that people can get into the workforce if they want to, if they don't want to be a stay-at-home parent, which obviously a lot of people love to do. But if you want to work, childcare is very important. I say that with two kids in childcare myself. So all of those things, the vouchers, Medicaid, raises, childcare issues, you know, do we give an additional COLA to retired government employees? Do we take some of the surplus that we're expecting to have this year and actually put it towards paying down some of the state's debt or cutting taxes further than is already planned? There's going to be a lot of discussion on how to spend any sort of surplus that we have. We don't have the exact numbers yet on the surplus, but those are expected soon. And people are saying so far that the short session will probably end before or by the July 4th holiday. I'll believe it when I see it. The legislature is famously fond of staying late, even when they say they're going to keep things quick and short. So we might be in for a few months, but obviously people have got to go hit the campaign trail. November is approaching. Now, down in Fayetteville earlier this week, Michael Regan was in town. He's the former North Carolina environmental chief. He is now President Biden's EPA chief. And he was there talking about PFAS. People will remember the Chemours plant in Fayetteville that made this chemical called Gen X that had been secretly dumping it into the Cape Fear River, which is unfortunately the main source of drinking water for most of southeastern North Carolina. And there have been class action lawsuits about this. The state has filed lawsuits about this. There's been a ton of legal work dealing with the pollution caused by Gen X, PFAS, what is known as forever chemicals, because once they get into your body, they stay there. They don't leave your bloodstream, and they can potentially be cancerous. There's been very little research into these chemicals and what they could actually do, and that's the case for all chemicals that are on the market. There's very little research done into anything that the EPA regulates. And so these new rules that he was here in Fayetteville to announce are looking at air emissions that factories put out that make chemicals like this and what they can pollute, you know, the amount that they can pollute into the air. And they say that that is going to be a key tool to stop these things from getting into people's bloodstream. Obviously, it's already out there, but they want to lower the limits. There's also some drinking water rules. That's something that is very near and dear to a lot of people's hearts, and not just in southeast North Carolina. I mean, these things have been found in Pittsburgh. They've been found up in Greensboro. These chemicals really are everywhere, and it's not just North Carolina. Plenty of other states. West Virginia has had some particularly well-documented problems with PFAS. Looking overseas, two of our congressmen were in Ukraine over the last weekend, and this was a bipartisan trip from Chuck Edwards and Wiley Nickel. Edwards is a Republican from Western North Carolina. Nickel is a Democrat from Cary. But they were together in Ukraine meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. And that is notable because Congress is just about to come back into session. And when they do, the word from D.C. is that funding for Ukraine aid is going to be a top priority. They both, in addition to meeting with President Zelensky, also met with some soldiers, some just regular people on the ground, and their statements that they put out after this meeting made it sound pretty dire, like what they had seen really troubled them. And they seem very concerned about essentially the fate of Ukraine if the U.S. doesn't keep helping their military, keep sending them money, weapons, ammunition, the things that they need to fight Russia. And so that is going to be a huge debate nationally. Democratic President Joe Biden has been pretty strongly in favor, as have many other Democrats, of continuing to fund Ukraine. It's been more divisive among the Republican Party. Former President Donald Trump has been pretty critical of it. You have critics like Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia in Congress, who has been sort of threatening the leadership of House Speaker Johnson over this issue. So there's been a lot of consternation on the Republican side of the aisle. So having someone like Edwards, even though, you know, he is a newer member of Congress, but, you know, he came back with a very forceful statement saying, we need to get this done. I'm going to be telling my Republican colleagues in D.C. about everything that I saw, everything that I learned on that trip, and we need to just work together to figure out how to get something done on Ukraine aid. So, you know, potentially two North Carolina members front and center in this debate. We'll wait and see what happens there. Closer to home, back in Raleigh, the state Supreme Court was also really busy this week. They had 3 days of oral arguments. I was there for two of them. There was a really interesting case over a charter school in Wake Forest and whether the town's decision to basically deny the charter school there had been politicized and sort of shrouded in a fake issue around sidewalks, if they're kind of using these sidewalk rules to hide their truly political opposition to this charter school, that's going to be an interesting, I think, political debate for the Supreme Court to have. Obviously, the Supreme Court has a Republican majority right now, 5 Republicans, 2 Democrats. There was another political case about the 2016 elections. Yes, it is 2024, and we are still talking about the 2016 elections here in North Carolina. This was a case dealing with the Pat McCrory campaign in his effort to try to not lose that election to Roy Cooper, which was ultimately unsuccessful. They had accused a lot of North Carolina voters of committing voter fraud. Now, I need to note, Pat McCrory himself was not part of this. He did not make any of these accusations personally. He was not part of this lawsuit. It was just lawyers and aides who had backed his campaign who were being sued by these voters who they had falsely accused of committing felonies, voter fraud. And these voters say that our reputations were ruined because of this. It hurt our standing in our communities, and they want to sue for defamation. The response from the McCrory folks is that, look, we weren't just throwing this out there willy-nilly on social media or anything like that. We were doing this through the official formal process that the state has set up. And so if you allow us to be sued for defamation right now, that's going to have a chilling effect on anyone in the future, regardless of their political party, who wants to file a complaint with the State Board of Elections, whether it's about voter fraud, maybe someone, you know, not living at the address they say they are, anything that someone might file with the State Board of Elections. If you can be sued for defamation over what you put in that filing, they said it's going to scare people from not reporting things. Even if they have real legitimate issues that they want to report, they might be too scared to do that because they fear that they could be sued. Of course, the response from the voters is there has to be a line drawn somewhere. And if you knowingly put out false information about people, you need to be held accountable for that. So that's going to be a really interesting debate from the state Supreme Court. And there was actually even talk that it could go beyond just, you know, when can you sue lawyers? It could affect doctors. They were talking about potentially, you know, if a doctor writes a document that could be used in a legal case or, you know, for their own professional use and it has, you know, potentially defamatory things in it, could a doctor be sued for what they write in an official report? So this case could have wide-ranging impacts beyond just state politics. And then finally, there was this case out of Kinston, North Carolina, at the Supreme Court, dealing with whether the town council there had been racially discriminating against black residents in the way that it picked which properties to condemn and to threaten with demolition. And, you know, this is the city's effort to clean up blight, overgrown, potentially dangerous properties, city leaders say. And I should note, Kinston Town Council is 100% black leadership. And so this is a tricky issue that is being brought. And the local residents are saying, yes, even though it is black leaders who are ordering these things, the fact that they are picking on black residents specifically can still indicate systemic racism. It's something that the state needs to stop, that we need to have more avenues to try to stop this without going through the long, drawn-out process that city councils can have, all these layers of bureaucracy for appeals that you have to file with the city. And they say, look, it's the city who's discriminating against us. Why should we have to go through their process before we should be allowed to go to court? And so they want to be able to just go straight to court. There was some really lively debate between the justices on that. And while I think it's possible that we could see some of the other more political cases on that come down purely along party lines. In this Kinston case, based on some of the questioning, I would not be shocked to see a ruling that is a little bit more bipartisan one way or another. There's plenty of options that the court has here, and it didn't seem to really break down along party lines. I may be wrong about that, but we will wait and see. I thought it was a really interesting case dealing with city planning and race and just all sorts of really fascinating issues in this growing diverse state that we live in. So that was This Week in Politics. I appreciate everyone listening, and we will talk to you next week.